Luke chapter 9, verse 51. When the days drew near for him to be taken up, he set his face to go to Jerusalem, and he sent messengers on ahead of him. On their way, they entered a village of the Samaritans to make ready for him, but they did not receive him, because his face was set toward Jerusalem. When his disciples James and John saw it, they said, "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" But he turned and rebuked them. And some other ancient authorities added into the text, "He rebuked them and said, 'You don't know what spirit you're of, for the Son of Man has not come to destroy the lives of human beings, but to save them.'" Then they went on to another village. As they were going along the road, someone said to him, "I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." To another he said, "Follow me." But he said, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But he said to him, "Let the dead bury their own dead. But as for you, go and proclaim the kingdom of God." Another said, "I'll follow you, Lord, but let me first say farewell to those at my home." Jesus said to him, "No one who puts a hand to the plough and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God." My great-grandfather was sent back to England to train as a Methodist minister, although he never completed those studies. Rarely settled for long, he must have been one of the richer men in Victoria for a time. He bought a city mansion for his daughter's wedding because it had a suitably large ballroom. But before that, when great-grandma Sini died, my grandfather was sent home to South Australia because his stepmother did not want anything to do with him. Dad said that he in many ways felt that his father had deserted him. As a small child, I knew nothing of that story, but it was obvious that Grandpop, although kind and generous, was full of pain. 10 or 15 years after Grandpop's death, as Wendy and I prepared to return to the North, I had told my parents of my plan to candidate as a minister. Dad wandered outside as I checked something on our truck just before we left and said, "I want you to know that you've got our support. We'll do whatever we can to help you. Family makes us and breaks us. It can be demonic. After a police officer in Melbourne was attacked by 2 young brothers, their father threatened violence against the police. 'I got zero respect and you know why. F the police and your crew, you swine. You attack mine, God help yours.'" Family links with family to form tribes and small nations. And soon we have people saying, "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" That father is just an average-looking sort of bloke. You might sit next to him on the train and not be uncomfortable. What drives him? It's my mother's 90th birthday this week, and we will gather with her for nibbles and champagne on Saturday afternoon. She won't know who her grandchildren are, and it's likely she won't remember me, but she will be as gracious and looking to make the best of it with her guests as she has always been. She will likely make some insightful and clever witticism which completely transcends the loss of her memory and reflects the love of wordplay she and I inherit from her father. Family makes us and breaks us. Grandma and Grandpa meant the world to me, yet something of their determination to always do what is right and proper always smoulders in me and threatens those who are not family with fire. Hospitality and family are a sacred obligation. In hospitality, and desertion of family are not neutral things. They're a kind of hostility, a rejection of a person's humanity. They're like that village which did not receive him. They invite retaliation, and the cost is real. The one without family is indeed likely to end up with nowhere to lay their head. Nurses ring this house in the middle of the night and ask the chaplain to come sit with someone who is dying all alone. Without family, there is no one even to bury us. How do we live in this tension? How do we live when it seems Jesus calls us to leave family? Is he asking us to abandon them? And what responsibility do we have to them? After all, family is often the home of a generations-long abuse. Firstly, an Old Testament story that this week's Gospel brings to mind concerns Elijah's call to Elisha to follow him. Elisha says, "Let me kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow you." Then Elijah said to him, "Go back again, for what have I done to you?" He returned from following him, took the yoke of oxen and slaughtered them. Using the equipment from the oxen, he boiled their flesh and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he set out and followed Elijah and became his servant. It's not clear if Elijah's response to Elisha is criticism or understanding of his situation, but I have seen something similar to Elisha's actions. When he was due to leave Annabella and go a world away from his family and teenage children for many months of ministry training, my father, Kulmenara, went hunting. In a day or two, he had brought back 17 kangaroos for the town. The message was clear: look after my family. It's also clear that he was a superb hunter. In the system of obligations and family interlinking, neither Elisha nor Kulmenara were abandoning their family. They ensured their support. Elisha gave up his livelihood in dramatic fashion. My second thought about all this comes from a conversation last night. We were wondering what has led me away from the fire-throwing intolerance of some of my background. What has prevented me from being consumed by it? And that's the point of the reading this week. If we will not follow Jesus without the old way of being family and nation, the way of violence, we will ourselves be consumed by it. It will be all that we have. Oddly enough, my getting away from being an intolerant prick seems to be that I left my family behind. In setting my face to Jerusalem, which for me was the call to ministry, I was exposed to a whole world of difference outside the insularity of my family home and town. I had to learn a new way to be, because the way of my hometown and family was not enough to make sense of the world. In the new parents and family assigned to me by the folk at Annabella, I was confronted by a different way of being a person and a Christian, which was, despite its difference, obviously genuine. I found other different but genuine ways of living amongst the European staff in town at that time, for they'd come from all over the world. Suddenly, my world was a wider place, and being Christian and being human was a much richer thing than I had imagined. Catherine Gettick Soltis says, "The relations of father and mother, daughter and son, are not made irrelevant by our faith. The very fact that we speak of God as father or as a mother hen shows that family relations often give the very basis for understanding the relationships of a disciple. We seek to regard all men and women as brothers and sisters, as children of God, not because family is usurped by discipleship, but because it is often disclosed through it. There will still be real and vexing tensions, but it seems the path of true discipleship will always be asking us to love family in a way that continues to expand and deepen the meaning of the very concept. In my first notes for this post, I scribbled down, "You will not properly see your family until you have seen the Christ," which is a way of saying that discipleship of Jesus heals us. Here's where I'm heading with this. When Jesus says, "No one who puts a hand to the plough and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God," it's not a harsh direction to abandon family. In its context, it is using a pithy saying to make a point about being focused and serious about something. In a contemporary piece of literature, Hesiod's Works and Days, a ploughman is described as one who attends to his work and drives a straight furrow and no longer gapes after his comrades, but keeps his mind on his work. In other words, to look back from the plough, whether to family living or dead, was to risk cutting a crooked or shallow furrow and thus ruining the work altogether. There is no place for looking back or even trying to look in two directions at once, being two-faced. Rather, would-be disciples must be single-minded in purpose, setting their faces like Jesus on the task at hand. But, having heard that quotation, we equally would say in our time that not to look back, not to see where we have been and from where we have come, is a shallow way of living. It's when I look back that I see the unsettled bug that great-grandfather gave us. We are a family of nomads, stock and station agents, soldiers and airmen, teachers and clergy. It's our loneliness and our glory. In my part of the family, Grandpop up and left the farm at the height of his life. Dad told me Jerry Cook had said he'll be back in 3 months, but somehow, in all the moving and all the crisis, he found a way of being. Dad went to the war, and as one of my sisters said, knew someone in every town in Australia as a result. I'm living in my 24th place since leaving home, but have begun to find myself, even though, in another way, nowhere is home anymore. Leaving family is our healing, but we can't leave. We are the us of our family, and which our family gave us. We can only grow into a larger sort of family where we find perspective and healing. The other night on the bike track, as two blokes loomed toward me out of the gloom, one yelled out, "Andrew!" and slammed to a halt. As I said later to his mum, "Cyclists in the half dark are like, 'I've never met you before, but I recognise the bike from your website.' And cousins in the half dark are like, 'I've never met you before, but crikey, you look like your mum and dad.'" There was a delight and a joy in meeting each other at last, for family complete us and make us whole. The man who threatens insane violence on behalf of his sons, I mean, threaten a Vic Pol cop on Facebook? Really? He does that because his family completes him too. The problem is that when our immediate family is all we have, we cannot abide any threat to them. It drives us fire-throwing crazy, even when we know we are being stupid. For such a narrow family binds us, and there's no escaping them. But Jesus is about giving us the whole world. He is offering to make the whole world family, which will cost us the smaller world of our birth family, and greatly enrich it, and even free us from it. This is also known as the kingdom of God. May peace be upon you.